Naros, it has almost been a year since you took over the CEO position. How satisfied are you in general with the developments of the platform and the progress you have seen in the past year?
Yeah, and it has been a roller coaster in this area. So I just a disclaimer, like I've been with Twino already from 2016 to 2021. So it's not that this is new company for me. But of course, in these 3 years, while as I was out in different job, then some things have changed. Yeah? So coming back was some kind of regaining the information, what has been done throughout these 3 years. And the last year was more like homecoming and trying to fix some things from the past and then also set some kind of strategic goals for the future. Yeah? So kind of a bit turn around what has been happening lately in the Twino.
What would you say was the status quo of Twino when you took over after you have been out for about 2 or 3 years? What would you say, in which position was Twino in at the time?
I think the main thing that was missing was some kind of purpose or some kind of long-term vision where we are going, what we're trying to achieve. And that was also some like first months was only actually to establish, okay, what kind of resources we have, what are our main challenges for now, and how we can turn this around to actually think on the future, not just to optimize, think about the next day, but actually think about next year and years after. Yeah. So I think that was one of the key moments when I stepped in. Yeah. So I think there has been much better times in Twino. I will not deny that because I was working previously. We had really ambitious goals. We had a really, really great leadership teams who wanted to achieve a lot. Yeah. So, and then of course, certain aspects, in the past just didn't allow to happen that. So, but now I am happy that we see that there is path forward and we are moving there.
Hmm. When you talk about the vision of the platform and let's say the lack of purpose potentially, obviously this is mostly driven by the shareholders and Armans Brooks, the founder and sole shareholder of Twino. You know, when I had conversations in the past with different Twino executives, you know, I always had this notion of he is very strong in terms of dictating where the platform is heading, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, I would say. Now, with you rejoining Twino and probably also witnessing what has happened in the past, how autonomous are you in making your own decision and execute your own vision of the platform moving forward?
Armands is extraordinary person. Yeah. So he likes to be involved a lot, especially when things are getting hard. He likes to be involved in operational level. But that was actually one of the first things that when we discussed about potential rejoining to the Twino, I said, Armands, that, okay, we have to do something with this, not just like optimize and kind of try to go shortcuts or something like that. We have to build something more. I felt from him support that yes, he wants to do something more. Of course, when the problems appear, he wants to just keep everything in control. So currently the almost year which I have worked, I would say I have been quite autonomous on how Twino platform moves, because on Twino group, there is like three business directions. One is the Twino investment platform, then there's lending operations, and then there's real estate business operations. And Armands is really deeply involved in the real estate. That's his key business line that he's solely like driving operational level. He's very involved also in the lending operations because that's the profit generating for him and he really interested in that. But he's very okay to give control to me over the Twino investment platform and the future, as long as we are not, of course, spending money like without any reasonability. So, but we have agreed on what we want to do with the platform. So I would say that those goals have been aligned with him. And that's very important that we have aligned goals, that we are not going in separate directions, because then, of course, shareholder has the final vote on that.
Mm. All right. Understand. Well, let's look into the different aspects and the current topics that are on the plate for Twino. Obviously, quick disclaimer, you know, Naris obviously hasn't been part of the platform throughout the entire time. So a lot of topics that we are discussing are, you know, not necessarily like you had the helmet on during, let's say, the more difficult times and when maybe decisions were made that were not necessarily under your control, but still it's kind of, you know, the legacy of Twino. And I'm sure after working through those topics, after you rejoined Twino, you have a good idea and a good sense of how Twino maybe has dealt in certain situations. And also, I'm curious to hear your perspective, how you changed then kind of the handling of those situations, how you were able to resolve certain situations. And I would like to start off with the Philippines on a positive notion. In January, you have communicated that you were able to recover all the outstanding loans. Good achievement. Can you break down maybe overall what happened in the Philippines and how you were able to resolve the situation then in the end?
Yeah. So let's start from the beginnings. Yeah? So Philippines looked very promising, and the Twino Group was looking into the launching the lending operations in Philippines already before the COVID hit. But then the COVID hit, and all the Manila region and all that was just closed down. Nothing can happen there. We had our business development manager who went there shortly before the COVID, and then everything was stopped. But then afterwards, later, in cooperation with VIA SMS Group, the operations were launched. The country itself looked really promising because the demand is there, but it's also very complicated from culture aspect, from regulatory infrastructure aspect, from different kinds of aspects. So soon after the operations were launched, and in Asia at that time, we had operations also in Vietnam, which we will touch later. Yeah. So, and when the portfolio was just starting to scale up, the Vietnam situation happened, and the shareholders decided, okay, that Asia is too unpredictable to proceed with the business. Also, the initial business results maybe were not as expected, and that Philippines decided, okay, let's close the Philippines together with Vietnam. Let's exit the Asia, and that's how it all started and ended very fast. But then the issue was that, yeah, how to recover those operations. That was something very lengthy process. The first idea was to recover everything and just close the business. But then there was interest from potential buyers who wanted to actually buy the Philippine operations with all the portfolio, the team, the office, which was set up there. And of course, initially, that was the much better resolution for this. Nobody expected that this will take 1.5 years to finalize the deal. That was unexpected aspect here. And once I joined last year in April, the Philippine deal was already somewhat in the progress, but it was really slowly progressing. And throughout all the last year until the end of the year, we were working and trying to finalize the deal with buyer, which was very complicated in the sense that the buyer was somewhat distracted, not focused on this deal. So, and we were very focused because we needed to get back the money for investors. We wanted to exit this. Yeah? So we were very committed to this. And luckily, then in December, we finally signed agreements, received the first part of the payments. And in January, we received the last payments. And so the business is fully sold to the new buyer. And from proceedings from the sale, we were able to recover all the principal for investors, also part of the interest. And we had to chip in our own funds to cover the interest, because when we were calculating the price of the deal, it was 1 year ago. So the interest was accumulated, which was not included into the deal. So we had to cover that by ourselves. But we were happy that was a minor part of overall amounts which we recovered. So I would say somewhat hard, complicated, but with happy ending. Yeah, so.
All right. Thanks for sharing this breakdown. Can you provide, I'm not sure in terms of compliance reasons, can you share any information about the buyer?
We just, it's buyer from Cyprus, located in Cyprus. Yeah. So that's the company, offshore company. So it's, we know that that's some lending organization, which has already several businesses across the Asia. So they wanted to add the Philippines, but that's all I can disclose.
Hmm. All right. And in the end, I think around €70,000 you contributed from your side, your out-of-pocket expenses. Have there been internal discussions in terms of like how much you would be, because you kind of sold the claims at a roughly 10% discount. Was there any discussion in terms of how much money you would be willing to contribute from your side?
There are actually two parts, because once the Philippines operations were closed, there was, as a risk management tool was already included the warranties from the shareholders. So we paid part of the portfolio already on the beginning when we stopped the operations. So that was first thing when not only us, the Armans in the sense, and also DVI-SMS, they chipped in this part of the guarantees. Yes. When we finalized the deal, the expectation was that we will have to chip in something that is accrued over 3, maybe 6 months. Yeah. So that was kind of our expectation. Of course, we are not happy that we had to chip in more, but at the same time, the situation was, it would be stupid to leave investors with open some kind of 30K or 40K euros, which kind of left there, or we would have to write down or something. Yeah. So that's why we kind of decided, okay, let's chip that in. But that was also something that we expected, that it should be around 50K, which we wanted to chip in. It was a bit extended, a bit more.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned it has been a lengthy discussion with the buyer. I'm not sure if throughout the process they have maybe other potential buyers in the mix as well. But has there been at any point, also then since you rejoined the platform, any scenario in terms of let's write off those loans, we can't find a solution, we want to cut the losses basically? Has there been any ideas, anything in that direction?
No, not about Philippines, because actually we had more demand. This was not the only buyer who has the interest in the Philippines deal. We had two or three more potential buyers who wanted to also go into the due diligence, but we were stalling them because we had already full due diligence done by this buyer who kind of committed that they want to sign. But if this deal would not go through, we would actually go with another. For us, it would be painful because we would have to write off 1.5 years of the work and start again with new buyers. So it would just extend, and maybe the price of the deal would change. But in Philippines case, I would say it's rather positive in the sense there is demand for lending operations there. So we were, I think that there wasn't at any point idea to write off or just close this deal or liquidate or something like that, because we see that there is option to recover everything.
Hmm. All right. Then let's switch to Vietnam. You mentioned already prior, the situation seems to be a lot more tricky. According to your findings, can you again provide a short breakdown in terms of what went wrong according to your findings and where Tuino is standing right now in this case?
Yeah, Vietnam was much faster than Philippines. I think a few years faster. We started operations there. Initially, it looked really promising. We ramped up portfolio even up to 4 to 5 million of loan portfolio, which is not huge portfolio for the Vietnam. There is a lot more potential. But then the situation drastically changed in 2023 when government stepped in and started to kind of put different kind of sanctions against the non-bank lenders, especially the foreign-owned. Yeah? So not the local ones, but the world shareholders are not from the Vietnam. In some other lending operation companies, it was even harder. But let's say the environment and the lending operation expectations changed from the government side, and we felt that we are not welcome there. So what was the action on reaction on that? The first was to try to recover or close the operations, but then the police started to enforce some actions on some other companies, and also our local team, which was together with the BISA, kind of got scared about the situation because people were put in the prison. The operations were a bit stopped, and that was the moment when also the people in Vietnam understand that, hey, there is something happening. We can keep the money and not pay back the debt. And these 2-3 months were critical from the portfolio perspective. It became unrecoverable because people knew that police is enforcing those non-bank lenders to out of the business, so we can just keep the money and not pay back. And the portfolio defaulted quite fast. And current state is that in Vietnam, the portfolio is zero worth. Yeah, so there's no worth on the debt. It's already long overdue. So none of the buyers, unfortunately, also due to the environment, no one wants to buy this kind of business. Yeah, so no, the license is not asset there. no team, no systems, nothing is asset there. So no one wants to kind of take it over. There is no nice case like in Philippines. Yeah? So, and currently we are in the process of liquidation. So we are from investor side, we have applied as a creditor in this liquidation process. So if anything will be recovered during the liquidation process, so we are the first in line on behalf of investors to recover something. Yeah, but to be honest, currently we don't see any like positive outcome from this. Yeah, so and the possibility that we will recover even something is really, really low. So I would say it would be really lucky if we will get something back. But again, if we are looking from the risk management perspective, the good part was that I think it was somewhere in 2022, like year before all this happened, that the Twino platform's risk management team enforced that shareholders have to give warranties on this because it becomes riskier business. And these warranties covered part of the portfolio. So it was kind of money out of the shareholders' pockets to pay back the investors. Unfortunately, this warranty was not enough to cover everything. Yeah? So currently still there is 1.8 million unrecovered investor investments, yeah, which most probably will default, but we wait for the final liquidation process to finish and then we can for sure say that yes, there is no assets to be recovered, unfortunately.
Thanks for this summary. When is the expected timeline for the final assessment if there are any assets to recover?
The liquidation process in that country is quite long. We have the consultants which are protecting our interests and working on behalf of us, but their estimate was that it will take 1, 2, maybe even 3 years to liquidate the company and go through all the process locally. And we initiated the process was initiated last year, November, December only. Yeah? So we are in the beginning of the liquidation. So we are thinking about some potential maybe options to maybe buy back from investors with 99% discount these loans just to close topic. Yeah, so it might be maybe something like that, just to close this topic for investors so they can maybe do some from tax purposes, do some kind of for this tax harvesting stuff. Yeah, so otherwise yeah, it would still take 2-3 years to get the finalization of this, something that we are not looking forward to.
Now obviously in hindsight, you know, companies, lenders could always make different decisions that would lead to a different outcome. I would like to take a step back in this case with Vietnam and look at the risk management that maybe Twino has failed, something that could be obviously addressed from investors. We have seen many lenders, as you mentioned, to 2023, tightening up regulations, a shift in the non-lending business environment. Many lenders have followed through and exited Vietnam in parts 1 year before Twino has officially communicated its departure from the Vietnamese market. Where do you see the reasons for it? I'm imagining there is, let's say, local teams that you have in place that follow the situation. I imagine you must have had some control board system in Latvia from Twino itself that is kind of monitoring the situation. Why would you say Twino failed to follow up or follow through with the new situation, the new environment, and, you know, concluded maybe to exit the market a lot earlier?
Yeah, this is a very good question. And also when I was looking into the situation, I was trying to understand the timeline of decisions and what happened. Yeah. So from today's perspective, of course, it's easier to say that the decision to exit the market should have been done faster than the potential to recover the portfolio to exit gracefully from the market was much higher. But at that time, looking into the decisions and sentiment was that the business was still growing. There was this tightening of the regulation, but still the investment done, the local team set up, the systems, the everything what was already prepared, there was hope that there is still that there's still chance for the business. Yeah, so and that hope was up till 2023, end of 2023, even in beginning of 2024, because yes, there was already the rumors that that there will be more strict regulations, but the team decided to risk and kind of still proceed with business development there. The portfolio was growing, the risk was higher, and I don't have explanation why that didn't happen, that that the business was not stopped earlier. I would say it was kind of like wishful thinking that there is still chance for some kind of business growth. Unfortunately, this risk didn't pay off. And 2024, yeah, beginning of 2024, it was already clear that there is no option for business and there's too much risk that even if we are doing everything according to the regulation, sometimes the local authorities interpret their own way how the business should be done. So I can summarize somehow in this way. Yeah. So unfortunately, I don't have more background information.
Now, to wrap up the Asian topic, I would like to also address your collaboration, your joint venture with YSMS Group, because I imagine, you know, you have shared resources. Where do you see the, let's say, responsibility and also accountability on their side to resolve the situation? And how do they come into the bigger picture?
Yeah, the responsibility in both cases in Vietnam and Philippines was split in two parts. That we know was responsible to attract the funding through the investment platform and provide technology services in sense the lending system, the all what's needed for operations. And on the ISMS side, it was the operations to set up the local team, the office, the risk and start the do the lending operations. Yeah. So it was working very well at the beginning, but the problem once, of course, everything is fine, then it's everything is working also fine. The question is when the problems are appearing, and most likely there were gaps in the alignment, how all the things should be done. They were responsible trying to recover all that must be recovered. At some points, I think that as these were two organizations, kind of like responsible for the same business, not everything could be enforced directly. Yeah? So, for example, if you want to force something in local team, you had to kind of work with the VISMS group here in HQ and then force some decisions there. So that may be some misalignment on communication, on some actions maybe. But I cannot say that they didn't try their best. Yeah. So in that environment.
All right. Then let's close off the Asian chapter, at least in this conversation. And let's move to Russia next. Also there was a recent announcement from Twino's side. Quite interesting. You were offering to repay the outstanding claims from the affected investors for a 20% discount. Now, you said there was a 200,000 euro limit for those early repayments. How big was the demand so far?
Yeah, so just a bit recap about the Russian situation. So the usual scenario was that we were able to pay back approximately 100K per month. Yeah, so that's the allowed money which we can kind of extract from the Russian operations. It's still happening there. So Armands had to sell everything there, but the local operations are happening and they are still able to pay us back at least in the sanctioned limits. Yeah. So, recently, the company in Latvia, which is keeping the claims against the Russia, was able to get more money, available money. So they decided that, okay, we can use this money to repay more, maybe Russian claims with the hope that in future they can recover it from Russia in the bigger amounts. Yeah. So it's kind of their risk to take this. Yeah. So, but to share this risk, the decision was, okay, let's do the discounted way on 20% discount. So, that was the offer which we received. And of course we, quite fast implemented this option for investors to apply for such kind of campaign. We are happy to see that demand has been 4 to 5 times bigger than we expected. So, and also we have negotiated with the Russian claims holder if there is availability to repay more. So currently we can already say that we have repaid more than 200 and demand is quite high. So from that point, we see that this campaign has been successful and people really want to get out of this claim situation. Also for us, we want to close this chapter. So this is a win-win situation for both sides. Yeah? So we are happy that we could offer such kind of thing and also investors are using this option.
Okay, so apparently there is more cash available to fulfill the desire of investors to exit early. Now, you said 4 to 5 times more than what you expected. What were you expecting in the first place?
Initial expectation was those K, yeah, so 200K, maybe a little bit about that. Yeah, so, but then when we negotiated, when we actually saw the first day demand, and then we already started to tell, can you get more money to use this opportunity? Yeah, so the company actually is trying to figure out maybe to satisfy the investors even more. Yeah, so let's see what the final results will be, because it will final between the end of February, then we will know the full scale demand. Usually the campaigns are the first week and last week, yeah, so when everyone applies. So, but we are happy that consistently those the demand has been there.
Hmm. All right. So doing the easy math, around 800,000 to 1 million has been requested. That's quite significant considering what's left on the table, which is around, what, 1.9 million, 1.8 million?
Yeah, something like that. A little bit below 2 million, sir.
And then obviously, following up on the easy math, good school lesson for me today, to the timeline for the full recovery. Also, obviously, you mentioned it's roughly 100,000 euro per month. So you're looking at a timeline of around 1.5 years now until the chapter is then completely off the table.
Hopefully sooner, yeah. But the currently the math works, it's 1 to 1.5 years to finalize this.
All right. Then let's switch over to Twino Properties. You mentioned Armand was very fond of real estate rental projects. After the launch, it took around 2.5 years, I think, since you decided to wind down the business. Also here, maybe a quick breakdown in terms of the initial idea and also the reasoning for now exiting this project.
Yeah. Initial idea was to scale up the rentals offering to up to 100 different type of rentals. Yeah? So, but then soon launching already the first rentals, the demand was there. The totally 10 rental apartments were funded fully, approximately 1.8 million amount. But the what maybe unexpected aspect was that those rentals are not giving the return that everyone expected. Yeah, so from initial plans, there was expectation it will be approximately 5-7% return on the investment per annum. Yeah, so. But after the first year of operations, it was visible that those numbers are somewhat not there. Best case scenario was 1-2%, and when I stepped in, I said, "This is not good product." So nobody wants the return 1-2% per annum. Yeah, so it's not even covering the inflation, and also it was quite hard to get out of this instrument, because that's already the instrument was structured as an equity based instrument. So it means that each investor is owning real part of the equity. Yeah. So it's not loan or it's not something that is differently structured. Yeah. So, and then seeing this, that the performance is not there, the return on investments is not there. And also then lot of investors, it seems so that they didn't understand where they are investing, what is the idea of the product, because the initial communication was that if you will hold it for 10 years, then of course the rentals price will appreciate, the performance over the time will get better, and then annualized returns will be 5-7%. But people expect, of course, the first year there should be already 5-7% return, or where is my money? Why it's there? Yeah. So, and also another aspect why we decided to wind down is that our real estate business line was trying to maintain this and try to develop this business, but it's also more complicated than initially maybe they thought, yeah? and that's also was another, the operational complexity is just too big for it, especially for 10 apartments. Maybe for 100 apartments that would scale better, but to get to 100 apartments you have to take a lot of risks, and question is, seeing that the first year is not yielding the results, how to fund another 90 apartments. Yeah? So I think that logically concluded with the decision, okay, let's not try to push this product more. Let's not try to restructure it, because it seems painful for everyone, from operational, from performance perspective, from investor perspective. Let's just take lessons learned and try to figure out how we can exit this product.
Speaking of the exit, what are your targets now to selling the remaining 9 properties, and also what is the return expectation at the end for investors?
Yeah, so we sold one apartment in last year, quarter four. So that was the first good sign that it's possible. That's already good. The return for those investors which invested in that apartment, I think actually it will be around 9-10%. So if we take account also the sales price and all the performance and all the that part, so it's still okay, but it's like 2 years holding. Yeah, so annualized it's 5%. Yeah, so nothing like particularly exceptional, but still also it's not lost money. So that's our benchmark currently. That's our only deal. So that's our benchmark. So that's something that we want to also look into the other apartments. Maybe the bit more worse news is that currently the market is not very good in demanding other apartments. We have some discussions with maybe with larger portfolio buyers who could buy out like all the apartments from us. But let's see how that goes and taking account our experience with Philippines, 1.5 year negotiations. We are not sure how fast it will happen, but internally we want to like internally our expectation that till half of this year, mid of this year, we will be able to get at least more 3 apartments to be sold. Yeah, so hopefully that will happen.
All right, good. Then let's switch to a topic where Twino has historically performed a bit better, which is the Polish market. Despite ongoing regulatory changes throughout the years, Twino always managed to adapt accordingly. Now, obviously, there is something new coming up in Poland as well, the new European Consumer Credit Directive. How do you think this will impact the operations that you have in Poland, and how do you also prepare for them?
Yeah, the Polish business is a success story of Twino, of course, because we have been there from 2011. So it's already 14 years in that market. But at the same time, the Polish team already, we were in the workshop recently, we are laughing that the transformation is never ending. So it's already 4th or 5th big transformation of the business. Yeah. So all the time there's something adjusting regulation or local consumer protection rules or whatever. Yeah. And Polish team is all the time trying to figure out, okay, what will be the next thing, how we can structure our business model. So I will not lie, the upcoming consumer credit directive will change the business model. We don't know yet how, because the final provisions of the legislation is yet to be released in March. It will be the draft version and it should go to the parliament and then Polish parliament has to accept. So, but I think in the big picture, we will know already in the March what will be the general things, and two things that potentially could affect the most, of course, is the interest cap and non-interest cap, which will be reduced, and second thing is the credit worthiness assessment. Yeah, so there will be more strict rules on the credit worthiness assessment. About the credit worthiness assessment, we feel quite strong because we have really good risk team, we have very tight risk rules, and we have very good flexible system how we can adjust that and do accordingly. About the caps, of course, that's the business profitability question. Yeah, so current legislation allowed us to set up the product quite successful and profitable. The new rules will reduce the profitability. The good part is that the profitability will still be there. It's just not be that high. And also we are already discussing potential restructuring of products to maybe start to offer some other types of products just to diversify, because those caps will differ depends on what you are offering to the market. For example, currently we are offering the credit cards, which is our main product in Poland. And for some reason, the credit cards will have different lower caps than any other loans in the market, like installment loans or payday loans even. Yeah. So, and now we are kind of a bit confused because the local regulator somehow seems the credit cards as a riskier business or somehow more limitable business. Yeah. But that's nothing new. So we see that we want to check the installment loan market. So that could be something. Also, in Poland, previously, we had the payday loan operations, which we restructured the credit lines. We are not keen to go back to payday loan business, but it seems that maybe in some small amount, we will have to also get a foot into that business as well. Yeah. So, but that's still to be evaluated because also those rules will be released in the March. Yeah. So that's something that's on the plate currently. I'm sorry, I cannot tell more concrete plans because we still are still looking for ourselves what will be the future in the regulations.
Well, I appreciate a lot the extensive recap of the current situation and also the honest feedback in terms of how profitability potentially might change then for the FinCard company. Obviously, it's the sole, let's say, market that is working very well on Twino that is also ensuring the growth of the platform. Now, coming with this new consumer credit directive, how do you think essentially also funding needs will change on Twino, and might investors also need to face consequences in terms of lower interest rates as well?
I don't think that the interest rates will change dramatically because the somewhat the market standard is set there. So if we will kind of go for lower interest rates, investors will just arbitrage to some other platforms. Yeah? So I don't think that interest rates will be impacted like for our core product, which is 12 months, 12%, the asset-backed security. Yeah? So we are testing waters with 10%, 8.5% shorter term. We are also working on more flexible asset-backed security option, which could be with a lower interest rate that we will disclose a bit later this year. But if we look on the investor like needs for funding, we still see that there is growth in the market because these regulations will push out some lenders from the market which are in less favorable situation from credit worthiness assessment, also from funding assessment. So even the regulation will strengthen, it means that we are quite well positioned to take that market share which will be pushed away from the lenders which will just exit the market due to the unfavorable regulation. Yeah, so we are looking how to acquire this market segment. Yeah, so I would say the volumes will grow, profitability potentially could be lower, but the demand will be still there.
All right, so there will be no shortage of loans then for the investors on the platform, which I think is a good news to take away from this. All right, listen, we addressed a lot of legacy issues that obviously you're not necessarily can be accounted for or be responsible or where we can see responsibility on your end. So let's talk about 2026 and maybe also the vision that you have for the platform. You know, besides the targets that you addressed with the current topics that you have, what are the things that excite you about looking forward with Twino, new products, new ideas? What is your vision? Where do you want to, you know, where you want to take Twino this year and then also in the future, then the next 2-3 years?
Yeah, this is great topic. I like to talk about the future more than legacy, but of course, legacy has to be fixed. But in the future, I would say that's not a surprise that are one of the key problems or challenges to address currently is that we don't have any diversification in the platform. It's just Polish asset-backed securities. And so I know that most of the investors are diversifying their investment portfolio just using different platforms. And then Twino is one of like just Polish specific platform. Yeah. So, but we want to expand on the offering, product offering on the Twino platform. The first, of course, would be through the lending operation expansion, which is more like on lending operation side, but also the lending operations are planning to expand in Europe. So we are looking several markets and how to actually use already very well established base of the payment institution in Poland to expand through Passport into other countries. But again, Europe CCD2, it's not only Polish question, it's also a question in any other market. So we have to wait for that. So, and also the lending operation is something that takes time to scale up and to be started to listed. So I don't expect that even if we start lending operations this year in new countries, that platform investors will see some kind of new products, asset-backed securities based on those countries, hopefully next year. But besides that, we are looking to expand on the asset classes. I think all of the platforms, alternative investment platforms, are trying to do that. Mintos is a trendsetter, of course, with bond-backed securities, with the different ETFs and money markets. So we are looking to add new product. Initially, we were thinking about the bond-backed securities because that seemed like a, let's say, easy, low-hanging fruit. Then looking on the instrument economics, unfortunately, there is no economics. It's just not for us. It's more expensive to offer it than investors. There's value for investors. So we are looking to some other options, how we can use or create a asset-backed security base to maybe securitize something else besides the loans. Yeah? So that's one direction, but nothing concrete currently. Then one direction which we are working is markets and crypto assets. We are in the process extend our investment brokerage license with markets and crypto assets license. We don't intend to become crypto exchange or compete with Binance, Kraken or something like that. Our main goal is how to give safe licensed way for beginner investors to maybe get exposure to the crypto assets and also custody in licensed secure wallets. Yeah? So not that you have to create and understand all the geeky stuff about the blockchain and wallets, but that you can trust Trino that we are taking care of the wallets with all the requirements from technical and security standpoint. Yeah? So. And that's one thing that we think would be interesting for a bit different segment of investors, not the particular the peer-to-peer investors. But we see there are some cross-selling opportunity for both segments. So that's one direction where we are looking. Another direction where we are looking to expand. We have some early discussions with potential partners to also offer asset classes like stocks, ETFs, and bonds directly as a brokerage. So brokerage services, we can list some kind of stock. But to be honest, it's a hard market because there are already so much opportunities to do that. Yeah. So why we will be better? Yeah. So and then we are thinking, can we somehow make it beginner friendly with educational aspect and just to be the first maybe experience how to do that. Yeah, so that's another direction. And then if you're looking about more longer term, 2-3 year direction, is that a shareholder Armans has one wish that we actually try to convert investment brokerage services to the credit institution or bank. So we have very early stage process with Bank of Latvia. We have expressed our intention that we want to do that. At the same time, we are not rushing. Okay, yes, let's faster get to the bank license and so on. But we are working the details to understand what would be the structure. Because if you look on the current setup from Armand's perspective, yeah, so shareholder perspective, he has lending operations in Poland under dependent institution. Then there is funding engine in Latvia in the IBS. So it kind of mimics already the banking operation just through different licenses, maybe more complex operational setup, more regulatory frameworks. Yeah? So it kind of makes sense to bring them under one unified regulation framework. Yeah. So if everything goes fine, then maybe in 2028, there will be Trino Bank, which will still offer the same MiFID services, which will still offer the same MiCA services, and which will also integrate the lending operations and potentially create the synergies in this space. So that's the, let's say, exciting future, which I'm looking forward to, and hopefully we will get there because the market conditions and also Trino history shows that we have ups and downs. Yeah? So not always all the good intentions are coming alive. But my goal here is to build something, not just keep lights on and fight the legacy.
All right. That sounds very promising. I wish you all the best to execute on those ideas. One last question. Obviously, what I witness in the market, there's a big sentiment right now for ensuring liquidity for investors. You know, there's a lot of demand from investor side to be flexible while gaining also attractive yields. Now we see different features are being implemented on platforms, secondary market, some fixed income products with very short loan terms. Is Trino developing anything in this direction as well? And if you can disclose it, maybe share some sort of.
Yeah, you are getting in the right direction. So this is something that we are silently in the corner doing. We are working on the new type of asset-backed security. I would say it will be the innovation in the asset-backed securities. We call the product Flexi. And the idea is that, as you mentioned, there is demand for the liquid type of product. Yeah. So it means that you can put money in and get out faster than 12 months or even 3 months or something. Yeah. So, and in our plans is actually already in March start internal testing of such kind of product where everyone can just top up the account and invest in this Flexi asset-backed security, which would be 6% return rate. So it kind of mimics bank overnight product. Yeah. So it's of course not the same, but it mimics the behavior. Yeah. That you keep the money in account, then you are earning 6% rate. Anytime you want to get the money out, you can just withdraw the money from these accounts. Yeah. So on the asset-backed security, the disclosure, it's more complicated because it's structured as asset-backed security. So with all the different characteristics of that. But we already have gotten acceptance from the Bank of Latvia on our prospectus, on our mechanics, how this works to proceed with this. And so, and we have quite high hopes that there will be interest from investors to somewhat diversify, maybe in this sense. Yeah. So still, Poland will be the Polish loan portfolio will be the one which covers this asset-backed security. But the mechanics, how this asset-backed security works, will be different.
Interesting. Thanks for sharing. Off camera, I knew about some of those plans beforehand. 6% interest rate, daily liquidity obviously reminds very strongly of competitor platform Bondora. Besides the underlying asset, which is obviously then Polish asset-backed securities, is there anything else that you would say would distinguish from Go and Grow? And why would investors maybe benefit from taking the Flexi product rather than the Go and Grow version?
Yeah. It's not secret that Bondora was something that we were looking on. Well, actually, looking also on Bondora's growth and investor demand, that was something that triggered us. Okay, there is investor demand for such kind. The biggest difference between the Bondora and us is that we would have this under the regulatory framework. Yeah, so under the asset-backed security, under the regulation. Yeah, so Bondora, they are registered under the financial authority in Estonia. Yeah? So, but it's not the investment brokerage services or MiFID type of the license. Yeah, so we would be the first, in at least to our knowledge, the first in the Europe who offers this under the investment brokerage or MiFID framework. Yeah. So, which for investors give a bit better protection because there are lot more requirements how you can structure these kinds of products and how you have to report for Bank of Latvia and how also the regulator is supervising these products. Yeah. So I would say that that's the biggest difference because from mechanics perspective, we look that it will more or less the same way. Yeah. So, because that's something that investors also have used to. And seeing that there is demand for this, of course, we will try to create something similar, just given that we have a bit different limitations based on the MiFID regulation.
All right. 50 minutes in, I would say that's a good sign to wrap up the conversation. There was a lot of topics that we addressed today. Thanks a lot for your time, Nauris, to sharing all the various insights on the different playing fields that you need to tackle right now. Wish you all the best, good success with your future projects. And hopefully we find ourselves now in the loop where Twino has one of the better times ahead. So yeah, best of luck for the ongoing projects and thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you.